when I stopped flying in 2005, I didn't know why I was so ill. I'd spent 15 years flying this aeroplane. I was like a zombie when I stopped. So, you know, you come to the point where you have to stop. And that's the first thing you have to do is stop flying, because you have to stop the exposures. Because while you've been exposed every day, you know, that's just not helping. So that's what I did, firstly. And then I was told to do nothing, to avoid medication, because a lot of people go on to, you know, because the doctors think it's a virus, so they give them antibiotics or something, or antidepressants, something like that, and that's what does the real damage. So right. Avoiding that sort of stuff is really important. But I just did nothing for 2 years, and then I slowly got out of it. But I'm a very fit guy, but a lot of my friends have died and, you know, had much worse problems than me.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
It's being called the asbestos of the airline industry, and it's believed to affect 250,000 pilots, cabin crew, and passengers worldwide. It's also been known to cause a mysterious illness in many of these people. Well, what is it? And what can we do about it? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. I'm here with John Hoyt, who is a retired pilot who fell sick with a mysterious illness in 1990 while flying a BAE 146 airliner, which then led to his premature retirement on medical grounds. And in 06, he became aware of aerotoxic syndrome, and after much research on the subject, he founded the Aerotoxic Association in 07. Hi, John.
Hi, Beverly.
It's great to have you with us today. I'm so thrilled to have you with us and be talking about this, because I don't think many people know about this. And so let's just start off. I just want to ask, what is aerotoxic syndrome?
Okay, well, that represents the illness which is caused by exposure to oil fumes in a confined space. It's simply that. You know, if you breathe in toxic oil fumes in a confined space, you'll get ill. And that's the label they gave it in 1999. There was an American, a Frenchman, an Australian, and they all got together through the 90s and identified it, and that's what they came up with.
Okay. Now, this is caused by what? Is it caused by, there's something I read about bleed air. Is this caused by bleed air in the cabins of the airplanes that people are flying in?
Absolutely. So since 1962, thereabouts, the new Boeing 727 in 62 used bleed air. And for the first time, they were piping air off the engines to you know, ventilate the cabins with. And, you know, that was a change, because previous to that, they pumped fresh air in. In the 50s and 60s, they had these mechanical air pumps pumping the air in. But in those days, they weren't, you know, properly made, really, and they failed regularly. So you can imagine a mechanical system going wrong. They said, look, it's easier just to pipe the air off the engine. You've got bucket loads of bleed air, unlimited supply, so let's just pipe it straight in. But there were concerns at the time that it would be toxic, that you know, they were told at the time not to do it.
But they did it anyway.
They did it anyway.
Which is common. That's a common scenario.
It's cheaper to do it.
It's cheaper to do it. Okay, so instead of just trying to fix the problems they were having with getting the outside air, they just went the cheaper route and got bleed air, as they call it, to pump into the cabin. Now, this is going into the cabins of these airplanes, which is basically like a gas chamber.
Sure.
I mean, if you get the wrong things in there. Yeah. Now, is this worldwide? Because you're from the UK, this is not just UK planes. This is American planes. It's all planes, correct?
Oh, of course, yeah. It's the same all over the world.
Right.
And Boeing know all about it, I promise you.
Yeah, okay. Now, are people more and more becoming aware of this, or is there something in the process of trying to be done about this to correct it?
Well, you know, we've been on it for 10 years now, trying to alert people. But we're up against some pretty tough opposition, as you can imagine.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We're winning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. And also, there's a lot of people that speak out against this. They're being punished in some type of way, either being ridiculed or terminated or even suffering character assassination. Why do you think that is? Is it just strictly a money thing, or could there be something else going on? Or is it just strictly a money thing?
Well, it's a money thing, really. You know, they don't want to admit it, basically. that there was a successful legal case in Australia 6 years ago in 2010, and that took 18 years to get through the courts, but they proved it, went to the High Court. So, you know, there's no ridiculing there. It was a straight win. So there's plenty of evidence for anybody who wants to see it.
Yeah. Well, what is the solution? Now, I've read where that it can be solved because at one time they were replacing what was called the wet seals, and maybe you can explain what that is, every 5,000 flight miles. And now they're doing that every 30,000 flight miles. And this, according to some, is what's really causing the problems. And first explain what a wet seal is and explain why they stopped checking it every 5,000 miles, because that was pretty helpful. I mean, it wasn't that much of a problem when they were checking those wet seals pretty often, was it?
Yeah. When you talk about seals, they're not seals. They can't possibly seal the oil from the air.
Okay.
So, and we've had that established recently. They're like membranes. A seal is something that, like a cup, and keeps the water from the air. You know, that's a seal. But these things do not seal the oil from the air. There's nothing to stop the oil getting into the air. So you're right. They used to change them every 5,000 hours, but typically they now change them more less frequently, and that's just a money thing as well.
Yeah.
So when they wear out, they let oil into the air. It's simple as that. But it's a fundamental design flaw. They're designed to leak, basically.
Uh-huh. Now, explain what is actually going on in the engine and with this whole process. What is happening to the air? How is it getting contaminated? Explain that process so people can really understand what is going on and how toxic this air is or can be that they're breathing in these cabins of these planes.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
All right, so we've established the air goes down the jet engine about halfway and it gets pressurized. And that's what they want. They want pressurized air to go to the cabin. So before it gets lit and burnt, you know, in the combustion chamber, they pipe it off, but it's unfiltered. There's just a pipeline going into the cabin with unfiltered air, which will have picked up oil, you know, by definition, because the seals aren't 100% effective. So now you've got oil in the air all the time, not just sometimes, but all the time. And whenever people have measured it, they've always found it in normal air. And the airlines say, well, that's okay, you know, it's just part of the problem, you know. But every now and again, maybe every 2,000 flights, is what you call a fume event, where the so-called seal does go wrong, and then you've got huge amounts of oil coming straight into the aircraft. And I had that once in my flying career, where we took off and the cabin just filled with white smoke. Well, you know, the oil is incredibly toxic. It's got organophosphates in it, which is a nerve agent, and, you know, it's not going to do anybody any good. And, of course, the air crew get it all, you know, day in, day out, because most of them fly, you know, full time, and they haven't got a chance, really. Whereas a passenger on a one trip, he probably would recover quite quickly from one exposure. But,
yeah.
You know, air crew get really hammered.
Yeah. So sometimes these wet seals fail. So really, when people are flying, they're breathing contaminated air anyway. But it can be, it's not as bad unless you see what's called, they call a fume event. And a fume event is, explain what that is again.
Okay, well, that's typically a visible thing. You know, it's so bad that you can actually see the white smoke. That's the thing. And
right.
People have taken photographs, videos of it. You know, it's you can't see one end of the cabin to the other. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
But this has been known for 60 years. But typically, you wouldn't have a fume vent. You just have molecules of oil in the air, you know, which you can't see, and you're breathing them. So, and that's how they get away with it, because most of the time you can't see it, really.
Yeah. So if you fly just a little here and there, it's probably not a big deal unless you have a fume event. But if you're a frequent flyer, especially the pilots and the cabin crew, they're continually being contaminated with this oil.
That's why we get sick.
They get sick.
You know,
okay.
Just
what,
the same.
Yeah. So if you see a fume event, then when the membranes, some people call them wet seals, but you say it's really a membrane. If they fail, is that what's called causes a fume event?
Correct.
Okay, and that's why they need to change the membranes every 5,000 hours to keep them working in, you know, in good working order, because they do wear out. And as they wear out, they're more likely, of course, to fail. And then you have a fume event, and then you've got made a lot of people sick.
Yes. Okay. But you must remember that it's a fundamental design flaw. So even when the air is good, the most recent court case was on a Boeing 737, which was 3 weeks old. It was just out of the factory, and they had a fume event. So
wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So even changing every 5,000 miles is no guarantee.
No,
of course.
It's there all the time. It's there, you know, it's a fundamental design flaw, really.
Yeah. And there are, do you know if they're working to change the design to make it better, or do they care? Is it still just a money issue and they don't care?
Well, the known solutions, Boeing, for example, have got the 787, and that doesn't use bleed air anymore. They've carefully designed it out of the system. So now they've gone back to pumping the air in, but with electric air pumps, which are much more reliable than the mechanical ones. So they're okay. And 787 is a very popular airplane because of that, because it cannot poison you.
Okay.
The air is taken in from outside. It's fresh.
Okay. So again, that is the new Boeing 787 Dreamliner. It uses air from the atmosphere. So you're saying they went back to the pre-1963 design to design that aircraft. So that's a safer aircraft for people to be flying. So that's good to know.
Absolutely.
Oh, so the industry knows there's a problem.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then an airline in Europe has actually filtered the air on their 757s. They've realized that the crews weren't, you know, were getting ill. So they've filtered the air. So now the crews are okay because, you know, it can be done. It can be done.
Yeah. Well, is that very expensive? You're saying they just buy a filter and put over the air compartment and filter it, which seems like a simple solution to me. But would that be that expensive? Why don't all of them just do that?
Well, if the passengers all asked for it, they would.
Right.
But at the moment, the passengers don't know about it. Most of the crews don't know about it. So while they don't know about it, they get away with it, I promise you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay, and that's why awareness is so important. Okay, well, if you see, if you start having some symptoms, what are the symptoms? You know, if you're flying, you start feeling sick. I mean, you don't know if you've eaten something that made you sick or if you're breathing something. What are some of the symptoms of air toxic syndromes?
Okay, so organophosphates are nerve agents, and they attack the nervous system. So mostly they're neurological complaints. And for example, when I started flying the 146, BAE 146 in 1989, after about 6 months, I got chronically ill one day, you know, having been really well, suddenly you're not well. So that was the difficulty for me. And then I spent 15 years flying the aircraft, not knowing why I was ill, with increasingly bad neurological symptoms, speech, memory, word finding, all sorts of things, sweating, you know, all the standard common symptoms known of organophosphate poisoning. So
yeah.
It was only when you stop that you realize, but trouble is, you know, when you're flying, you can't really stop. You just have to keep going, really.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the main symptoms of organophosphate poisoning or, you know, sickness is neurological or neurological problems.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so if someone is flying and they start feeling really sick. Now, could this also make you have other symptoms other than neurological? For instance, could you have headaches or sick at your stomach? Or
Yeah. I'm afraid there's a great range of symptoms, and that's what baffles the doctors, because, you know, they were designed to do ill health to every organ in the body. So it affects the heart, the lungs, everything in the body, really.
Right.
And that stumps the doctors because they get multiple symptoms, you know. And
yeah, that makes it so much more difficult when these problems affect pretty much every system, but you're breathing it in. So the molecules, the chemicals are going all over your body. So it would make sense that it would could affect any area of the body. So what if you're flying and you start to feel sick? What should you do? I mean, you don't want to just jump to conclusions, but what are some of the more common symptoms and what should people look for or do if they start feeling sick on a plane or shortly after deplaning?
Well, I think it's fair to say that all the reports we've got of people flying, they're feeling incredibly unwell when they're flying. They're often sick, violently ill, and, you know, have difficulties. And then they get off the aircraft, and most times they kind of recover after a few days. I continually meet people who have been sick for 2 weeks after a flight, and they kind of make sense of why. So, you know, it affects different people in different ways, clearly. But obviously, to get rid of it, you could wear a mask to stop yourself inhaling, because the crew have oxygen systems. They can breathe oxygen, and the pilots are okay, really. But the passengers haven't got any protection whatsoever, because the drop-down oxygen masks are not meant for that sort of thing.
Right.
They're only meant for decompressions, you see.
Yeah, but now you're talking about like a charcoal mask, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so really it would be, it's just a good precaution for everybody to just get, those masks are not very expensive. Just, you can buy several of them in a package off Amazon. I've done it before. Just get an oxygen charcoal mask and just have it in your purse or in your briefcase or wherever, just in case.
That's right.
Yeah. So if, now what if they fly all the time? Should they wear, and I mean, people may think this is extreme, but listen, I've dealt with a family member. My daughter's been chronically sick. Believe me, you do not want a chronic illness. So would it be reasonable to think that if you fly all the time, it wouldn't hurt to just wear the mask all the time?
Absolutely.
As you're flying?
Yep, and they're working on systems at the moment to protect people, because they're, you know, I can't say exactly what, but they're creating systems to protect people at the moment, because they know the damage to, you know, particularly frequent flyers who are flying all the time. And it doesn't matter if you're in first class or business class, you know, the air is no respecter of the class of, you know, aircraft you're in.
Right. So now you say they are working, or you say the airline industry is working.
Well, many people are working on this. I'm talking about the, you know, my friends who are trying to protect people.
Okay.
You know, the various protection systems, really.
Okay. Yeah. So are they coming up with solutions and going to present it to the airline companies to add it to their airplanes? Or is it something they're trying to do to just protect the people? Or, I mean, how are they going to work with airlines to get this done?
Well, I mean, as you know, it's a worldwide issue, and there's a lot of trouble in Germany at the moment. The crews there, the unions, and they're doing some good work.
Okay.
Go to work every day with this sort of stuff going on, so, you know, they're after protection, so
yeah,
you know, these things will be sorted out eventually.
Yeah, so in other words, more and more people are waking up, and they're hearing from more people, so that's going to motivate them to do something about it. And they're working to come up with some loose solutions. Now, what are some of the solutions? Just like air filters, that type of thing, or is there a variety of solutions?
Yeah, so the 787 is the best one, because that does away with the problem completely.
Right.
But then filtering the air is another one, which is being used by some people already, but it shouldn't be difficult to do it for other airlines. But until they, you know, get passengers asking for it and the crews asking for it, they won't do it. It's extra cost, you know, and they're really not interested in spending extra money if they don't have to.
Right.
So, and then you can change the oil formulation, because a lot of the, you know, there's a French oil company which produces oil which doesn't have organophosphates in, because they worked it out, you know, 30 or 40 years ago that it's poisonous, and they took them out. So, you know, there are oils which don't use organophosphates. Again, they could be used, but that's not really a full solution, is it? It's a part solution.
Right, right. But it would help. Anything would help.
It would help. Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what can be done if you know you've had a fume event, if the cabin starts getting smoky and you know there's a fume event and you get really, really sick, what, you know, and it's more turns into a chronic, or how can you prevent it from becoming a chronic thing? Say if you fly regularly, you're probably getting this stuff built up in your system. Or is there some type of detoxing program that they could do, or some doctors they could go to that specialize in maybe this, or should they just go to some doctors that specialize in detoxing? Or, well, I mean, what would you suggest that people, because people that fly regularly, they're getting these toxins built up in their body, and at some point, you know, their, so to speak, bucket might overflow and they may start getting sick, or they may experience, or anyone, one of us could experience a fume event and get really sick. What would you suggest they do if they, you know, start experience a fume event?
Okay, yeah. So when I stopped flying in 2005, I didn't know why I was so ill. I'd spent 15 years flying this aeroplane. I was like a zombie when I stopped. So, you know, you come to the point where you have to stop. And that's the first thing you have to do, is stop flying, because you have to stop the exposures. Because while you've been exposed every day, you know, that's just not helping. So that's what I did, firstly. And then I was told to do nothing, to avoid medication, because a lot of people go on to, you know, because the doctors think it's a virus, so they give them antibiotics or something, or antidepressants, something like that, and that's what does the real damage. So right. Avoiding that sort of stuff is really important. But I just did nothing for 2 years, and then I slowly got out of it. But I'm a very fit guy, but a lot of my friends have died and, you know, had much worse problems than me. But you're right, a detox program is the way to go, really.
Yeah, and you need to go to a doctor that knows how to do a proper detox. Tell him what's going on, and, you know, do your research and find a good doctor that knows what he's doing with detoxing, because detoxing can be dangerous, and you don't need to do that willy-nilly, so to speak.
No.
But a good detox program would be very good, and just keep that monitored. And again, if you fly regularly, you really need to take, or any time you fly, but especially if you do it regularly, it's just really good to wear one of those charcoal masks, because any type of protection is better than none.
Yeah. And doing research for years on this, you know, 10, 15 years they've been doing medical research, and now they've got some really black and white tests where they can prove the damage done to you has been caused by this. So, and I know all about those tests and where they've been sort of created in Europe and America, for example, so that they're available, but they're still very hard to get hold of because they're not welcomed by the industry, really.
Correct. You know. Do you know the name of some of these tests?
Absolutely, yeah. It's all on the website. If you go to the website, you'll see.
Okay, tell us your website. Is it aerotoxic.org?
That's it, www.aerotoxic.org.
Okay,
we've just revamped it, actually, first of all, October, so it's got a fresh look to it, hopefully, and we'd welcome any feedback. And, and there's a writing competition there, you'll see, you know, because we want to get other people talking about this thing. So I put a writing competition in there to try and get other people to talk about it, because we're fed up with it. We've been on it for 10 years, really.
Right. So tell us a little bit about your website and about your organization and what you're doing to solve this problem.
Okay, well, I started it in 2007 because I was so ill for 15 years, and then it took about a year to work out why and what had caused it. And then I decided to start this website, and it started very modestly to start with, but now it's the sort of well, it's probably the only one in the world which has got so much information on it, and it's been built up over well, it represents the sort of 60 odd years of the flying problem, I suppose.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm pretty proud of it, really.
Yeah.
And the association, we just help people for nothing. If they contact us, we just put them in touch with the right people, and there's a list of doctors on there, and try and help them along, really.
Right. So what can people do to help you fight this? Just go to your website. Is that the first thing they need to do?
Yeah. I mean, we're getting some help now from outsiders, you know, who are sort of giving us some ideas. But the irony is we're all affected by the problem, so we're not very clever at business and sorting out charities and all that sort of work. It's, you know, can you imagine when you're ill, it's not very easy.
No, it's not.
Some good brains on the board at the moment, and they've been really helpful. So yeah, the more the merrier, really.
Right. Yeah. So you have a lot of really good, and I went to your website. You do have a lot of really good information on there, and you have listed the names of the tests that they can have their doctors to order, to so that they can be tested to see if they have varying of these chemicals in their system, and that's really, really good, because you don't you know, you won't know how to, you know, it's good to know what the problems are so that you know how to treat them and detox and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Now, you also have a book. Tell us about that. And it's on your website. It's also free to download for people to read. Tell us about your book.
Okay, so none of us aircrew are allowed to go to court, really, to get compensation. It's quite frustrating, really, when you know exactly what's caused your illness. And you get to the point where you just want to tell other people what's the matter with them, really, sort of to help them. So a few years ago I decided to write this book in frustration, really, but I didn't write it. I got a scientific writer to, you know, I paid him to write it and then had it edited properly. So it's not actually my work, but it's for my information. But I stand by it, you know, and it was printed a couple of years ago. And I just give it away free, really, because it's helpful to people to see, you know, that what might have caused their own ill health. And again, we've got to be careful because not all ill health is caused by this thing.
Correct. Correct.
We have the medical test to prove it was, you know.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and that's really good that they've come up with some tests and you have them freely accessible on your website so people can check it out. And so, and that would be good. I mean, I encourage everybody, if you, especially if you fly, you know, routinely, to go to the website aerotoxic.org and check out the website. Now, we'll have this below the podcast page on America Out Loud and on the misdiagnosedlife.com, and you can so you can go to it. But for the radio listeners, anybody listening in, it's aerotoxic.org, aerotoxic.org. And also, he has a free book on there that you can download and read his story and learn more about this. And the website has a lot of really, really good information. And he also said that the new Boeing 787 Dreamliner is the best one out there now that they uses air from the atmosphere. So that anytime you can do that, that's also a really good thing. And also to review a little, if you're flying a lot, it's always helpful to have it regardless, but if, especially if you fly a lot, it's be good to have a charcoal mask to in your carry-on luggage just in case you need it. And if you fly a lot, it wouldn't hurt just to wear it all the time on the plane because it's just a protection for you. And you don't want to, you know, you just don't want to get sick with this stuff because especially neurological problems can be very, very serious. Well, any of it can be, but in my opinion, the neurological is some of the worst problems that you can have. Well, John, is there anything else you would like to say on this topic? To, you know, any advice you would give people that we haven't covered?
Well, I don't know if you're allowed smoking in indoor rooms. Cigarette smoking, is it allowed in America these days? Or
correct? Yeah, I'm not in public places, restaurants and stuff.
They're banned it over here, so you know it's like the same thing. It's nerve gas in a confined space, so it's no different to smoking, really, if you think along those lines. So, and right, the industry know that that's what's coming at them, really. So it's just a matter of time, I think, before they you know, deal with the put the solutions in place, really, that which are known.
Yep. Right, right. So it's, the solutions are there, and you said they are working on it. And hopefully, what's your best guesstimate as to how long you think this problem, it'll take for this problem to get at least somewhat solved? And then the air will be healthier on planes.
Yeah, it's trouble is you've got 25,000 aircraft flying around. You know,
right.
And designed for. So it's going to be a few years yet.
Years yet. Yeah.
Fixed, is it, really?
But the more noise the people will make, and all, the better and the quicker it'll get done. So everybody should just remember that.
Famous celebrity to get zapped, and then we'll never hear the end of it, you know?
Correct, correct. Yeah, the right person just needs to know and be affected by it and start speaking loudly about it. As they say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So, okay, well, thank you, John. I really appreciate all of your hard work and bringing this issue to the public's attention, and I wish you the best. And
thanks, Beverly.
And thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast. We're on the America Out Loud Network. We're also on Talk Radio. So as always, take care. Until next time.